Welcome to Rapidly Rotating Records, an hour of toe-tapping music from rapidly rotating 78 RPM records of the 1920s and 30s, with yours truly, Glenn Robison, on Island Radio, KISL Avalon at 88.7 on your FM dial, and at KISLAvalon.com on your internet dial. We've got dance bands, hot bands, sweet bands, show tunes, novelty tunes, blues, jazz, and more on everything from Aeolian to Xenophone and by everyone from Aronson to Zerke. On this evening's show, we'll experience some heartache, celebrate the birthdays of Abe Ullman and Fletcher Henderson, try to answer the question, what's the use, and hear some rapidly rotating records about strabismus.
What?
Just listen, you'll find out. But first, I want to make a correction to last week's Christmas show. I played Santa Claus Blues by Clarence Williams Blue 5 with Eva Taylor and announced that it was written by Charlie Jordan. Well, Charlie Jordan did write a Santa Claus Blues, just not that one. The one I played was written by Charlie Strait and Gus Kahn. Clarence Williams also recorded another rendition of Santa Claus Blues as the Clarence Williams Trio in a much slower and bluesy style on October 26, 1925, a couple of weeks after the Blue 5 recorded the raucous version I played. Now that that's out of the way, a couple of weeks ago, my friend Yuko received in the mail an invitation to a Patsy Cline tribute concert. She took one look at the imposter on the card and declared that the invitation was being declined. Not because she doesn't like Patsy Cline, because she does. But because if she wants to listen to Patsy Cline, she'll listen to Patsy Cline and not an imitator, even if it has to be on a recording. Anyway, one of Patsy Cline's biggest hits was Heartaches, and I thought, now, there's a segment topic. So, with thanks to Yuko for helping to program the show, here's a set of rapidly rotating records about heartaches. I'm going to start off with Heartaches, but don't worry, not by Ted Weems.
Was such a sacred thing to me. I can't believe it's just a burning memory.
Heartaches, heartaches, what does it matter how my heart breaks?
I should be happy with someone new, but my heart aches for you.
Heartaches,
heart ache. An ache without any pain. I'm glad you're back, sweetheart, eh?
Yeah.
And I'm in love again.
Yeah. Sweetheart, eh? Yeah. The kisses from the lips as big as mine.
Will add to mine, sweetheart, eh?
Heart, eh?
And make it more divine. Say, why is it? Every time I look at you, I shake
and tremble.
I
resemble a ship in a gale without any sail.
Ah, sweetheart, eh? You're sent from heaven above. I'll gladly stand this heartache,
baby.
It means that I found love, love, dee doo, love, dee doo, lie.
Discloses, you'll find happy souvenirs. So let there be no more heartaches, no more tears. The trees will be green, the skies will be blue, the birds in the air will sing. For you're meant for me and I'm meant for you, and love is a wonderful thing. We'll climb the hill together and look for those happy years. So let there be no more heartaches, no more tears.
A good idea. No more heartaches. I hereby declare, make a better life process till all trouble disappears. Let There Be No More Heartaches, No More Tears. That was Bob Causer and his Cornelians with Elmer Feldkamp taking the vocal honors on that May 2, 1934, Perfect 78. And that actually sounded pretty good for a perfect record, which are usually in far from perfect condition. Bob Causer didn't actually lead the band on that recording. He was a dance music arranger in New York and did lead a band in the early 30s, but it's not known to have recorded. His name was used as a pseudonym on dozens of recordings on a number of British and American labels. No More Heartaches was written by Irving King, Leon Towers, and Raymond Wallace. Really. Before that, it was Fats Waller and his Rhythm and Sweet Heartache from April 9, 1937. Sweet Heartache was written by Franklin Washington and Sam H. Stept, and that band also recorded an instrumental version in that same session. We began that heartache segment with Heartaches. That was Burt Lown and his Biltmore Hotel Orchestra on January 19, 1931, with the vocal refrain by the Biltmore Trio. Heartaches was composed by Al Hoffman with the words by John Klenner. I'm Glenn Robison, and you're listening to Rapidly Rotating Records, bringing you vintage music to which you can't not tap your toes from rapidly rotating 78 RPM records of the 1920s and 30s. Over the past 15 years, I've played only three of Abe Ullman's compositions, and he's not had his own birthday segment. Well, that travesty is going to be remedied right now. Abraham Olshewitz was born in Cincinnati, Ohio on December 20, 1887. As a child, he was taught music in school and had private lessons, and in the early 1900s got a job as a music salesman, traveling around Ohio, Kentucky, and Indiana. His first published pieces were Moonface in 1907 and Violetta in 1908, the same year his first rag, Honeymoon Rag, was published. In 1912, he went to New York, where he managed the George W. Meyer Music Company and published his most famous piece, Red Onion Rag. After spending some of 1913 in Europe, he went to Chicago, where he founded his own LaSalle Music Publishing Company. At the end of 1917, he enlisted in the Army, but was not sent overseas, and after discharge, he returned to New York, where he would remain for most of his career. He was an early member of ASCAP and was its director from 1946 to 1956. He died in Rancho Mirage, California on January 4, 1984. An extensive and detailed biography can be found on Professor Bill Edwards' website, regpiano.com. Here are three from the pen of Abe Ullman. Thank you.
forever by my side. But when summer's near, you disappear. Don't even say goodbye. You'll long for me someday, but I'll be far away. 'Cause when the cold wind does blow with its ice and its snow, then you'll
Now there's a fun record. The San Francisco sound of Art Hickman and his orchestra on the one-step intermezzo Fee-Fi-Fo-Fum, actually recorded by Columbia in New York on September 17, 1919, during a marathon 8 or 9 days recording multiple takes of 28 titles. As if they weren't busy enough, Art Hickman and Frank Ellis, the pianist in the band, also recorded at least 2 piano rolls for QRS while on the trip. Fee-Fi-Fo-Fum was written by Ullman and Otto Mattson. Marion Harris first recorded Some Sweet Day with the American Quartet on February 28, 1917, but Victor rejected that effort. They tried again with a solo version on July 12th, which is the version we heard. Some Sweet Day was written by Ullman with Ed Rose and Tony Jackson. We began our tribute to Abe Ullman with the New Orleans Jazz Band and My Sweet Louise, credited solely to Abe Ullman. That Regal 78 was waxed May 6, 1925. During last week's Christmas show, listener Frank in Spokane, Washington, texted me to ask if I hadn't forgotten Fletcher Henderson's birthday. I'll take that as a request. Even though he gets played regularly throughout the year, looking back, apparently Fletcher Henderson hasn't had his own segment since 2005. So, December 18th marked the birth in 1898 in Cuthbert, Georgia, of James Fletcher Henderson, who would later change his name to that of his father, becoming Fletcher Hamilton Henderson, Jr. He learned to play piano from his mother, who was a piano teacher, and although he became quite skilled as a pianist, he decided to study chemistry and mathematics, earning a degree from Atlanta University. He moved to New York in 1920 to find a job in that field, but took a job as a song plugger at the Pace Handy Music Company, and the following year became house pianist at the new Black Swan Record Company. He led his first band in 1923 and landed a gig at the Club Alabama in New York. In 1924, the band played at the Roseland Ballroom, which became their base for a decade. Louis Armstrong joined the band from September 1924 until November of the following year. In the late 20s, the band played at Connie's Inn in Harlem, with Don Redman arranging for the band, and in the early 30s, Henderson began arranging. He disbanded in 1939 and worked as an arranger and pianist for Benny Goodman, and also arranged for Isham Jones, Glenn Gray, Jack Hilton, and the Dorsey Brothers, and also composed. He began leading his own band again in the early 40s, but a stroke in December of 1950 ended his active career. Fletcher Henderson died in New York on December 29, 1952. Here are three stomps from Fletcher Henderson and his orchestra. Thank you. Three Stomps in a Row by Fletcher Henderson. Too much? I don't think so. We started off with the Connie's Inn Orchestra in August of 1931 and a recording on the Crown label of Sugarfoot Stomp, written by King Oliver and arranged by Fletcher Henderson. Henderson also recorded Sugarfoot Stomp in 1925 and in March of 1931 for Columbia. Next, it was a Don Redman arrangement of the Henderson Stomp, recorded by Columbia on November 3, 1926. On piano, Fats Waller. We finished up our tribute to Fletcher Henderson with Stockholm Stomp, from a Brunswick 78, waxed January 22, 1927. Stockholm Stomp was written by Al Gehring and Jack Pettis. I'm Glenn Robison, and the show is Rapidly Rotating Records. We're here each and every Sunday evening at 6 on KISL Avalon, but available 24/7 on demand anytime at all online at rapidlyrotatingrecords.com and on iTunes as a podcast. For no particular reason, for this next segment, we're going to try to answer the question, what's the use? Thank you. From August 14, 1929, that was Adrian Schubert, credited on the label of that Domino 78 as Roy Carlson's Dance Orchestra, and What's the Use of Being Lonesome with So Many People Around. The vocalist is unidentified, but Jerry White is credited on another of the three records from that session, so maybe it was he. Before that, it was Jack Purvis and his orchestra and What's the Use of Crying, Baby, from May 1st, 1930, co-written by Jack Purvis. Written by Lorenz Hart and Richard Rodgers for the Garrick Gaieties, we started off that What's the Use set with What's the Use of Talking, performed there by George Olsen and his music, with Bob Rice and Bob Borger making up the vocal duet. That recording was from June 4th, 1926. An effort a couple of weeks earlier on May 21st was rejected. Besides Yuko, I had some other help in programming this week's show. A few weeks ago, listener James in Iowa sent me a recording by the Girls of the Golden West, and it's going to start off a strabismus set.
What?
Oh, just listen.
Oh, he's done and gone away, kicked a bucket yesterday, our cross-eyed bull that lived upon the hill. He took strychnine and died, and we hope he's satisfied, 'cause he did the whole darn thing against our will. Ali-o-lay-lay, ali-o-lay, the old lady. Ali-o-lay-lay, ali-o-lay, the old lady. He said goodbye to me as I sat up on his knee. He said he'd meet us on the Golden Shore. I took it as a joke, didn't think that he would croak, 'cause he never died so suddenly before. Oh, delay, oh, oh, delay. Oh, delay, oh, oh, delay. Oh, delay, oh, oh, delay. Gone to rest, I'll fulfill his last request and plant a bunch of onions on his grave, so that when we're passing by we can pucker up and cry, 'cause the doggone thing just simply make us brave. Ali-o-lay, lay, ali-o-lay, the old lady. Ali-o-lay, lay, ali-o-lay, the old lady. We suspected his demise by the color of his eyes, but our efforts to revive him were in vain. He looked at me and sighed and turned up his nose and died, then raised up and smiled and sneezed and died again. Odelay, oh, odelay, odelay, oh, odelay.
With all his deviltry,
I'm through with two-time dams and their alibis. Give me my man with naughty two-time eyes. I've got a cross-eyed papa, but he looks straight to me.
Kelly is his name, you should see him play for Pennsylvania. His opponents love him cause he loses every game. He's the talk of the university, who always grabs the football and runs the other way. Cross-eyed Kelly from Pennsylvania, who tackles his own teammates and breaks up every play. Cross-eyed Kelly from Pennsylvania.
Can he run?
Yeah.
Can he kick?
Yeah.
He's a Bearcat full of steam. He's wonderful, he's marvelous,
but for the other team, they kicked him out of college with a hip, hip, hip hooray. Cross-eyed Kelly from Pennsylvania.
Why, it's Pennsylvania's ball, and the score is just 7-all. There's 10 yards to go, and there's just about 2 minutes left to play. Ah, the fullback's doing fine. He's crashing right through the line. But they lay him low and the goal's just about a step away. There must be 50,000 people here, folks, and they're as excited as they can be. Kelly yells, give me the ball and leave the rest to me. Then Kelly runs and he runs and he runs. Why, he's running to victory, but not for Pennsylvania. Why, he wins for Tennessee,
who always grabs the football and runs the other way. Cross-eyed Kelly from Pennsylvania.
If you haven't figured it out, strabismus is the medical term for crossed eyes. We started off this strabismus set with the Girls of the Golden West in one of 64 sides they recorded between 1933 and 1938, My Cross-Eyed Beau, from November 4, 1935. The Girls of the Golden West were Mildred Fern Good, spelled G-O-A-D, who went by Millie, and Dorothy Laverne Good, who went by Dolly. They were born in 1913 and 1915, respectively, in Mount Carmel, Illinois, but later, in order to bolster their country-western image, claimed Muleshoe, Texas, as their birthplace, which also happens to be where another famous person was born, my wife. While teenagers, they made their professional debut on radio station WIL in St. Louis, Missouri. They were heard on WLS National Barn Dance in 1933, which led to guest spots on Rudy Valley's radio program, and that led to their own weekly program on NBC and a recording contract. While they both sang, Dorothy took the lead on most vocals and played guitar. Next, it was the Georgians, the first band within a band, a subset of the Paul Specht Orchestra, with I've Got a Cross-Eyed Papa, But He Looks Straight to Me. The vocalist on that November 30th, 1929 recording was Billy Jones. I've Got a Cross-Eyed Papa was written by Roy Ingram, who also brought us Alabama Black Sheep, Won't You Return to My Fold, My Mama Needs Me Here Till Daddy Comes Home, and the Jitney Bus. We finished up with Joe Hames and his orchestra and Cross-Eyed Kelly from a 1934 Associated Radio transcription. The band recorded it for Banner on October 2, 1934, but my copy of that record was less than broadcast quality, so you got the transcription. Cross-Eyed Kelly was written by Al Sherman, Al Lewis, and Abner Silver. The vocalist was Cliff Wetterau, who changed his name in December of 1935 to Cliff Weston. I'm Glenn Robison, and you've been listening to Rapidly Rotating Records. This is our final show of 2014. Thank you for listening and for your support, and I hope you'll tune in or click in again next year. I want to wish you a safe, healthy, happy, and exceptionally prosperous new year, and as always, I thank you for your very kind attention.